Hello, everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of Space Boys. I am going to be your host, Chase Atherton. Now, let me give you the lowdown of what this podcast is all about. See, this is an actual play podcast, which means that me and five of my nerdiest best friends, Josh, Emma, Tyler, Gabe, and Taylor, all sit around a table and play this game we love called Starfinder. Now, Starfinder is a tabletop role-playing game, so it's a lot like D&D and Pathfinder, except it has a very different aesthetic. It is set far in the future of the Pathfinder universe, where technology is abundant, enough to have starships and intergalactic travel to different planets. But it also brings back magic and gods and old gods and all these things, and it wraps this technology and this old fantasy magic into one genre called sci fantasy, which I think is amazing. So basically, when we play this game, we use dice to tell us what happens and our character sheets to tell us what's going on. The rules take the dice and the character sheets and combine them and tell you exactly how hard it is to do whatever you want to do. And in this game, you can do whatever you want to do. Do you want to take your giant laser rifle and shoot through a blast door? There's rules for that. Do you want to jump off a bridge during a windstorm and try to land in a teeny tiny little window? There's rules for that as well. Do you want to shoot an antimatter heavy missile launcher at another starship? There are rules for that, and it is beautiful. I have a very special role on this podcast. I am the GM, or Game Master. Essentially, I sit behind my little screen and I tell the players what they can and cannot do. I become anyone they ever meet and want to talk to. I describe to them where they are and what's going on, and I feed them every bit of imaginary information they need to put a fully fledged picture of what's going on in their head. Though this can be an entirely sandbox adventure, we will be telling a very particular story, an adventure path. For those of you that don't know, adventure paths are pre-written adventures that the publisher, Paizo, prints for the Starfinder universe, and I, the GM, get to read them and then take the players through the pre-written adventure. It's not all set in stone, though. I get to do whatever I want. If I decide to take something in or out, here or there, it's all up to me, but essentially we'll be going down this adventure path. The adventure path we are going to be playing is the Signal of Screams adventure path, one of the most well-written adventure paths I've come across in a while. And, as the name suggests, it is a horror adventure path, so be ready for some physical and psychological mutilation. But before all of that happens, I would like to let you all know that it does start with a lot of roleplay, a lot of exposition for this horrible, horrible story we're going to tell. And I am so very excited to go through it. If you want to know what's going on with the Space Boys podcast, you want to interact with us, you want to see some memes from some of the players, you want to send us a lengthy message about how terribly I'm doing, go ahead and follow us on Twitter at Space Boys Pod. Or if you want to shoot us an email, go ahead and email us at spaceboyspodcast@gmail.com. Originally, I was going to put this introduction on our next episode in the series. However, I would like to share with you all some Session Zero recordings. Now, note that this is just for flavor. This is just backgrounds of characters and the characters and players reacting to meeting each other's characters for the very first time, which I think is very fun to listen to. However, it was during our audio troubleshooting day, so it wasn't actually supposed to be released, so please forgive the audio quality as it will be up in the very next episode. Or if you don't care about the flavor and you don't want to hear about the stupid backstories, then you can just skip right ahead to the next episode and you won't miss a beat. Well, I guess it's about time to start, isn't it? Welcome to the first episode.
Hanging down is a little like body.
And filling the door frame is a 9-foot.
Two stalks begin to lift above the top of the silhouette. some of which at the edge of her face are beginning to wilt slightly.
Eyes are like black orbs.
Blinks the blood out of his eyes and looks up into the sky.
Booyah.
In between bouts of wind, you can hear a pair of weapons exchanging blows.
You don't hear anything. I just show up in the doorframe, bitch.
Hey, come on, I bet we can take him, you and me.
Sippy raises an eyebrow at her.
But recently, you all got a message on your personal comm unit that said, please report to Mrs. Ubuntu's office, head of special operations for Starfinders. There you will be assigned your newest mission. This is very important. Please be there within 6 days. You all went to Absalom Station. Some of you stayed at nice hotels, some of you not so nice hotels. And the day comes where you're supposed to report at a crisp 9 a.m. And we hear a knock at the door. Knock, 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 knock. That was my voice. It wasn't real knocking.
Here, how's this?
You know what? That probably works better.
And that's using your noodle.
Mrs. Ubuntu looks up from her desk, says, yes. Yes, come in. And the door opens. The knob turns and the door opens inward. And who do we see, Taylor?
In floats what looks like, I mean, it is at first glance, a large brain. it's kind of like a helium balloon size. You know, the ones that you get at parties, like the brain is that sized, and hanging down is a little like body. Its appendages look almost like little ant legs as it hovers, yes. Curled up, fetal position. As the brain floats along, the brain is like, you know, like a brain color. It's pretty bright pink. It isn't very gray as most brains are. And you can see it contract and like expand almost as if it's breathing with my character, the contemplative, mm-hmm. as he telepathically flies towards the desk.
Oh, shit.
You see him wearing some nice gray metallic armor and slung over one shoulder. It's a very, very small Starfinder backpack that his four little vestigial arms are kind of, like, clasping around. Hanging from one end of the backpack is a holster. On it is a pretty old-fashioned-looking pistol that has the name Jairus written on it.
Jairus.
Yeah. My name is Jairus.
No, his name is not Jairus, but that's a little, like, that's a little flavor text for you.
We zoom in close to the brain. We squish into the brain's memories.
Brain blast.
Yes,
like brain blast.
A la Jimmy Neutron, yes.
3, 2, 1, got a blast.
So in our got a blast, we find ourselves on Akaton. It's a dull red planet in the packed world solar system. And we enter into the outskirts of a city as the sun starts to set in the background. There lies a nice two-story townhouse. And we enter into the attic of this house, where we see drawings and writings strewn on the walls, slanted ceiling, and the floor. They are organized into sections, and one wall is full of printed images of green landscapes, cosmic nebulas, horizons on large gas giants, and asteroid belts. In the center of the room, we see... Who do we see? What's his name?
We see Nom 824.
Nom 824. Telepathically holding up pages and pencils, writing and drawing, crumpling them up and throwing them into a corner.
No. None of these storybirds are adequate for my vision.
Through a hole in the floor, another contemplative floats up into the room. What is her name?
Her name is... Zin 716.
Zin 716.
I like these numbers.
Comes in and says, greetings, loved one. The day I experienced was far from ordinary. Would you like to know the details? I can assure you the day was well outside parameters.
Hello, loved one. It is most excellent to see you. I'm feeling most melancholy at this hour. I simply cannot remove this mental block from my desk, so to speak.
I'm very sorry for that. You have noted to me before you wish to travel outside of the city and beyond the planet, even. We are both young. Many hundreds of years left to see each other. I support your need for experiencing the universe. This will allow me to combine what I have learned about the universe in books and combine them with your first-hand experiences. As other life forms might say, I enjoy living vicariously through you. Though that sentiment is technically impossible, of course.
Many thanks, my dearest. I do wish to leave neither you nor our abode, especially as you begin your new job in the lab. But still, I must tell you, I saw an ad for the Starfinder Society, and I felt a peculiar sense of longing.
Go. Send me information during your journey so that I may know that you are still safe. I will help gather your things when you choose to leave. For now, I have sustenance prepared for both of us. She massages some of the brain folds on Noam with a small vestigial hand.
His name is Nom.
Ah, sorry. She massages some of the brain folds on Nom with a small vestigial hand and floats back down through the hole in the floor. Nom floats to a nearby window and watches a far-off spaceship leave a docking bay and fly up into the atmosphere. And we see the ship continue to climb as a reflection of Noam is seen looking longingly in the reflection of the window. And then we zoom back out of the brain. Through the squish. And back into the room. And Mrs. Ubuntu goes, "Very nice to see you. You must be Nom, is that correct?"
"Yes, yes, I am."
And how do I pronounce the second part of that?
Nom 824. It's my favorite passage.
Nom 824. Thank you. Well, the other should be arriving very soon, but how was your trip here?
It was adequate.
You didn't really
give me first class on the spaceship here, so I just enjoyed business class. It was fine.
That is a shame. That is a shame. Maybe next time I can arrange something for you. Sorry, this was kind of a special project surprise upon me, but I'm excited to tell you all about it.
I think I saw someone pass me on the way up. They should be here anytime soon now.
Oh, wow. What a... And the plot device.
Help me, Josh.
Who's next?
Is it large?
Footsteps? Fuck me.
You hear large footsteps coming down the corridor.
Oh my god. I knew it was you.
And filling the door frame is a 9-foot gray alien with four arms. Think like fucking forearms from Ben 10 with like Captain Gontu from Lilo and Stitch.
Oh shit.
He's got like big ass tusks. And I'm wearing some full, it's golem armor. And I've got like a tactical vest over it. Over my back, I have a big ass battle axe and like a giant machine gun.
Thank God he's not a bear.
tactical knife's in his vest. And yeah, he's got a bandolier with a bunch of bullet clips in them. And he's just a large, intimidating presence.
So this hulking gray, like rhinoceros skin, four-armed, tusk-toothed person comes squeezing through a 5-foot
door. To get in through the door.
And his muscles are just rippling. Like, any accidental hit would knock this doorframe clean off.
And he has a massive, like, X-shaped scar right across his face.
Oh, we're going to hear the backstory of that, I hope.
Wait, is it like Okuyasu and JoJo Part 4?
Hell yeah. Where it's just like the X right between the eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's this entire campaign with JoJo reference.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so it's going to be JoJo references the whole time. And that's fine. That's all right. We approve of that. So, Mrs. Ubuntu goes, "Oh, I'm so sorry about the door. There's nothing we can do about that."
"Yeah, it's fine. I'm used to small spaces."
I say, I float a little closer and I say in Shobad to him, "Greetings, friend. How was the trip from Akaton?"
I'm surprised he speaks Shobad, but I respond to him in Shobad and he's, "Oh, it was fine. I love traveling."
I do not.
Mrs. Ubuntu goes, "Oh, great. You speak each other's languages already. A fun little friend bond."
And who are you, buddy?
I'm Noam 824. Please make your acquaintance. And I just kind of like sway in midair.
Looks like one of these brainy types.
Okay, all right, that's fine.
Literally a brain.
This is the one who goes, oh, okay. Why don't you introduce yourself? What's your name?
I'm Gorbash. Gorbash warrior.
Gorbash.
I extend one of my forearms.
I extend two of my vestigial little like arms towards him.
I shake his little vestigials.
Ow, that hurt.
It's like literally holding a pencil.
Great.
We zoom into this hulking Shabhad's mind. We open on a red desert plain, back on Akaton.
Wow.
There's great sandstone mountains that line the bleak horizon beyond. A group of hulking Shabhads form a semicircle around a younger, air quotes, smaller, Gorbash. He's mixing different bowls of unknown liquids and painting his body to match the surrounding landscape. He seems focused, but a shaky hand betrays that hard exterior, and the crowd parts for a 600-pound, 13-foot behemoth of a Shabhad. He is adorned with ceremonial robes, floating beads, and holographic pictures of Shabhad elders floating around him. And he steps out of the crowd and walks toward the young Gorbash. Gorbash pretends he doesn't see him approach. The man speaks up.
Gorbash, it is almost time.
I'm ready, father.
This is your final trial, son. After this, the deserts will smile on you, and you will always become part of them. May the Elder Ancestors shine sun upon your journey, and may Damoratosh guide your weapons. But seriously, remember, head on a swivel, aim down the sights, and don't let it sting you, or you won't be able to finish the Trial of the Fall, alright?
I will make you proud, father.
I know you will make us all proud, son.
Gorbash turns around and looks at a 100-foot by 100-foot hive-like structure, made out of hardened mud and destroyed bone. There are large tunnel-like openings all along the spire, and Gorbash walks up to one, takes one last look at his father and the tribe, and walks into the hive. He draws his weapons and carefully plunges into the hive, holding a two-handed machine gun in one hand and a two-handed fighting melee weapon in the other.
Oh, fuck.
A cool guy, I see. Alright. We got a cool guy over here.
Sunlight only exists in strange crescent shapes as it bends through the tunnels, and Gorbash stops as he hears a chittering sound. His head whips around, and there is combat. A dozen razor-sharp legs and segmented body are exposed by thin beams of light, and there's a gunfire slicing and tearing as both combatants cry out in pain and adrenaline. An explosion goes off, revealing a massive insectoid creature with 12 legs, 2 pinchers, and 3 slender stingers, all currently stuck into Gorbash's arm.
Oh, fuck!
Silence. And outside, the tribe waits nervously for Gorbash to return. There is movement, and they all stand to attention. We see Gorbash's right bottom arm swollen to double its size, and carrying the insect creature's corpse on his back. His face is bleeding with a deep X-shaped cut. Someone in the crowd whispers, "He'll never make it." The crowd's energy depresses and they nervously steal looks at Gorbash's father. He's very still. Gorbash carries the corpse on his back with 2 arms while he climbs the hive with the other 2. And we see the other side of the hive is a sheer cliff, littered with a pile of dozens of rotting exoskeletons at the bottom. It is a grueling climb, and the crowd pays little attention until he miraculously starts reaching the top. He gives out a victory scream, laced with pain, and throws the insect off the cliff. And the crowd explodes and starts chanting and smashing all 4 of their fists together. Gorbash! 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 Yes! Creating a thunder that echoes through the landscape. And Gorbash,
ow, I hurt my knuckles.
Gorbash blinks the blood out of his eyes and looks up into the sky.
Fuck, that hurts.
Blackout. And we zoom back out through this hard skull of a creature. Back into the room with Mrs. Obuntu. See, you're already making friends. They should all be getting here soon. They're about to be late, though. I wonder if the next person is going to happen to walk. We hear another knock at the door. Smaller knock, a more gentle, reserved knock. And before we introduce the character, we're going into a little bit of a memory of this character.
Wow.
We open on a dimly lit basement. Lights atop tanks and jars of different colored waters give this space a whimsical feeling. And there are large power distributors that hum and water tanks that take up almost every square inch of wall space. While the whirring of this makeshift laboratory isn't professional, it is well done. There is hanging on that wall a picture of a slightly older aged uplifted polar bear. On hanging on the wall.
Oh my god.
Oh no. What are you doing with that bear?
a figure bursts in through a door, obfuscated through the refracted light of the tanks of water, as Gabe's character quickly flicks a light on, revealing a large personal laboratory space with charts hanging or floating near water tanks, holographic whiteboards full of writing, and one wall dedicated to diplomas that stretch from floor to ceiling. He bolts to his desk with a package in hand. He shoves papers off his desk and onto the floor and opens a package, muttering to himself. The doctor opens the package to reveal a large book titled The Wondrous Adventures of Tweak and His Loyal Crew, the Swarriors, written by Tweak.
That's fucking me, you guys.
And cracks it open. He starts to read quickly, and as time passes, he falls upon the phrase and speaks out loud.
I intended to join the Starfinder Society, but my contract was cut. Starfinder Society. Now, that might work.
He looks out over his laboratory, and then he looks back to a picture of someone. Very bearing child. And he runs his hands over this picture. Is obfuscated by all the light in here.
Obfuscated.
Fuck you. That's a good word.
He runs his hand over...
It's a great one.
...over the picture, and he reaches up to a little switch on the desk that's labeled Automated Maintenance. It's covered in dust and green webs, and he flicks it on, grabs a photo, swipes up a Cooking for One book, and walks toward the door. He pauses and looks over and sees the picture of the uplifted polar bear on the wall. And he grabs a small dart from a nearby table and throws it at the photo, and it hits squarely in the center of the nose. And he gives out a soft
booyah
and exits through the door.
Oh my god.
And then we get a description of what this character is as he walks in through the door into Mrs. Obuntu's office.
Alright, so a figure comes to light. The initial silhouette seems humanoid, although missing some very distinct features. Coming in at only about 3 feet, it appears that this creature may be slightly hunched. Once in full view, it can be seen that this figure is an Osharu, a slug-like humanoid. With grayish-yellow skin, it can also be seen that while completely covered in a layer of ooze, it also appears wrinkly, hinting that this creature is in the older years of his life. With further examination, it appears to be the reason behind his hunch, as well as his slightly slower speed as he's sure to take his time while entering the room. Fuck. Two stalks begin to lift above the top of the silhouette, with an eye at the end of each. The left eye has a floating monocle that looks as though it's been in use for a while. While putting on his lab coat, he says, "Hello there. I'm Dr. Ruger Squish, and I hope you all printed your syllabi for Bio 4. I'm a professor in marine bio, but it's a pleasure to meet you. I'm here to join the Starfinders."
God damn it, not another brainy one. Well, you two must be peas in a pod already.
I don't understand. Hello. Was that a joke about the bio?
Yeah, I am a professor in marine bio.
That did not tickle me as I'm sure you thought it would.
That's okay. I mean, I'm just used to saying it is all.
All right, then.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Dr. Squish.
Thank you.
Very nice.
What did you get
His
your doctor
His name is Dr. In? Squish.
Dr. Squish.
In marine bio.
You got your doctorate in marine bio?
Yes. I teach marine bio.
I'm glad you can make it a Starfinder initiate.
Yes.
How many more we got coming?
Oh,
because if I'm stuck with a couple of nerds, this is gonna be terrible.
Oh, well, it's really okay. I'm
nerd. Can you do this? And I'm gonna pull out telepathically my pistol and hold it in front of me. And then I'm gonna
can't do that.
And then like in what's the fucking movie? In Tombstone, I'm gonna like swirl it around in the air as if I'm doing it on a finger. I don't have fingers, but, but yeah, and then I'm gonna put it back in the holster.
Wow, that was real cool.
This is Ubuntu gives a soft clap. Wow, very good. I sure can't do things like that. I don't know about you guys.
It looked easier than it was, Dr. Squish.
Oh, okay. Maybe you can teach me.
I won't teach you.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad you're all getting along so swimmingly. The next person should be here any second. Oh, is that a knock at the door right here? Oh, it is. Come in. Door's open. And in walks Emma's character. Would you like to describe your character?
You see a Goran woman with mossy green skin and a face covered with layers of blue petals, some of which at the edge of her face are beginning to wilt slightly. She has lilac-colored eyes and short leafy green hair that is brown and dead at the ends. She is 5'9" and 140 pounds of pure plant muscle coated in a thick layer of heavy armor. A small stone is orbiting her head, and she's holding a shiny doshko like a staff. She has a playful and challenging look in her eye and a half-cocked smile, and she has awesome cheekbones.
Excellent. Yes.
So this
to be a plant.
Plant-like person, yes. Viney hair, very fibrous, wonderful. We find ourselves in, would you like to say her name?
Fimbria Bartolin.
We find ourselves in Fimbria Bartolin's mind. We're looking out into a beautiful forest dotted with meadows. Yellow lines run down the trunks of this of these alien trees, while four winged, featherless birds squawk loudly. It's dusk and the sky is turning from its natural green hue to a deep red and purple. Two faraway moons hang lazily near the setting sun. This is Vesk 3. In the Vescarium, a different, completely different solar system. A constant wind is blowing through the beautiful landscape, and in between bouts of wind, you can hear a pair of weapons exchanging blows. We cut to a meadow dotted with purple and orange flowers, where there is a large Vesk armed with a Dashoko. He is older and his scales have faded in color, and he has a large horizontal scar over the bridge of his nose. And he leaps out of the way as a blue-faced Goran woman, Fimbria, attacks, while also wielding a Dashoko. The Vesk fights back with grace. Fimbria's attacks get more and more frantic, but the Vesk blocks every move. Suddenly, Fimbria's eyes flash.
Drop your weapon!
The Vesk's eyes go distant, and he robotically lets go of his Dashoko, and it plunks to the ground. He shakes his head and comes back to his senses.
Hey, don't do that Zort on me without asking me first.
Okay, fine.
She bonks the Vesk on the head with the end of her Dashoko and begins to laugh. As she's laughing, the Vesk picks up his Dashoko and swipes it under her legs, knocking her down. The Vesk, with a twinkle in his eye, gets up and calmly walks up to her. He reaches out his hand towards her.
Better luck next time. That's enough for today, Fim.
Fim slaps his hand away and hoists herself up with her weapon.
Are you tired already, Giuseppe?
At that moment, an armored vehicle rolls up the road near the meadow on a long dirt road. A young, heavily armed Vesk jumps out with a wryly smile on his face. Giuseppe sighs loudly and shoots a serious look at Fimbria.
Someday, we will be free of them. I promise.
Hey, come on, I bet we can take them, you and me.
Giuseppe raises an eyebrow at her. And he sighs and pulls out a huge, tightly bound stack of hard currency and starts walking towards the vehicle. The younger Vesk sees Fimbria staring at him, and he narrows his eyes at her. Fimbria studies the younger Vesk's face and commits it to memory. She never forgets an asshole.
Oh, man. Fimbria Bartoli?
Bartolin.
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 Mm-hmm. Bartolin.
Mrs. Ubuntu goes, oh, welcome. You must be Fimbria. Welcome.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you. Nice to meet you as well.
Greetings.
The fuck are you?
I'm Gorbash, wow. A mighty warrior.
Nice to meet you.
Wow. I like your weapon.
Thank you.
Wow, looks like we're pairing off already. So great. So none of you have your own starship, and that's okay, because the last person coming does. And we've been providing him with lots of expansion bays and you know, money for weaponry and everything. So that's how you'll get to the place you're going to. Hope he shows up. Says, "Oh, what's that I hear? Clomping on down."
You don't hear anything. I just show up in the doorframe.
She goes. She goes. Oh, who's there?
And you've been standing there this whole time.
Just a couple minutes.
You all turn around, and you see Tyler's character standing silhouetted in the doorway. Mm-hmm. What do we see?
So you look, and there, lo and behold, a 7-foot, mostly gray, but 7 feet tall, lanky arms going down, elbows going down to almost the waist, arms very long, eyes are like black orbs that are coming out of his face. Yep, that guy.
You're fucking Verthani.
Mm-hmm. He is a Verthani operative. He walks in. He's got no glasses on because the orbs for eyes make that kind of difficult. But he does have a pretty sick leather hat on. And you're like, damn, that's a really fashionable hat. Is it also kind of got a duster on. It's not a fedora.
Such a fashionable hat in my life.
He's got a little coattails going on, but that's, you know, that's just for fashion. He's just there to flex on you. And he did. He successfully flexed, and now he's in.
So 7 foot tall, very lanky, very, very sinewy person with dome-shaped eyes, and these eyes are like mouse's eyes. They like come out of from where the head is.
I like
almost
that.
In a half dome.
Don't forget that my eyelid convex. Also comes out like that. Like
so it's a very large eyelid.
Oh,
very
wow.
Loud.
That's very interesting.
The only thing that gave him away was how loud he was blinking.
That's the only way
other
she heard
that,
me coming.
Completely silent.
Like Squidward walking around.
For reference, for those of you who aren't here, there is a Verthani is kind of has a interesting art in the Alien Archive.
It's so bad.
And one of the players found it while looking through races and made a meme of it on our group chat. and it was after Tyler had already picked that race.
I was like, yes, yes, worship me.
So it was a pretty great time. Anyways. So, what does this man say as he enters the room?
Damn, I didn't expect there to be so many of you now.
Hello, friend.
This is Ubuntu says, oh, hello! And,
you're late.
You must be, Gorbash? Oh, no, sorry, you're Gorbash.
I'm Gorbash.
Yes, Gorbash. Great.
Nice to meet you, Gorbash.
Do you have
That's
a last
a little
name?
Bit racist of her, honestly.
No, just Gorbash.
Oh, just Gorbash.
I like
I
that.
I thought it was
Simple.
Bash.
It's a Shoban tradition. Gain our names when we go through our rite of manhood.
You must be very proud.
I am.
It's good
it
to
means,
meet you.
It means hell scream in Akatonian.
That's cool. He wipes sweat off his forehead a little bit.
I'm a big fan of how we have two just deep voiced lads.
You got a problem?
Yeah, what's wrong with our deep voices?
Yeah, you got a fucking problem, nerd?
I have no problem.
I'm a little bit intimidated, if I'm being honest.
That's okay.
The name's Tarkus. Tarkus Black Eye. Because of, my black eyes, mostly.
I
Don't
see.
All of you have black eyes?
Shut it, alright?
Mrs. Ubuntu goes,
I
wait,
speak inside your
wait.
Mind, I can't shut it.
Oh, fuck, he's in there.
Mrs. Ubuntu goes, wait, no, sorry. Do you have a brother then, or a twin or something?
Shut up.
I have...
Don't talk about it. Don't say it.
Oh, sorry, is that it's a colloquial, like, nickname. It's not your real
sure.
name.
Sure.
Oh, what's yep. his real last name?
No, don't tell now. Them. Don't.
Is it on this sheet?
Don't do
probably,
it.
It's probably
no, this
like
is confidential.
Poop head. Something
don't
he's
say
embarrassed
it.
About.
I'll tell them later, I promise. Just don't say it.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways...
Wipes off his sweat again.
You're a little self-conscious there.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. Aw, man, worst word to echo. But
coming.
Sorry.
Hey, everyone. Chase just really wants to let you know that he's coming.
I'm just deleting that, though. Doesn't exist
just
going to
edit that out.
Never happened.
So someone cut that.
You know, and then I'm going to forget about it. Okay.
We're definitely going to continue referencing it, so...
Yeah.
Well,
well, might as well just keep it in.
Well, anyways.
Cutler, stay in it.
We go back into Tarkus Black Eye's mind. Back into his memory. We open on a darkened spaceship. We hear the crunch of some organic matter. Alone Verthani, Tarkus Black Eye, eats chips in the dark bridge of a spaceship. Please, please end it now. Outside, outside, we can see the diaspora, an asteroid belt devoid of most life. And if there is life, it's very dangerous. Lights blink to life on a nearby computer console. And Tarkus lazily looks over at them, and then back to the night sky. Red lights and alarms go off. And the whole bridge springs to life as footage of people boarding through the airlocks is shown on the computer screens. And he reaches over and hooks a small carabiner on his belt to a similar one on the chair he sits in. The unknown people swarm the bridge quickly and surround Tarkus, guns drawn. And one grizzled Shavhad walks up to him and gets down close to his face.
Nice ship you got. Too bad you left it out for the pirates to get, didn't ya?
The others start to laugh, and even Tarkus starts to laugh a little bit.
Ha 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 ha.
The others stop laughing as Tarkus continues to laugh, and he barely squeezes out the words through laughter.
Oh, I just think it's so funny. You guys are in my fucking ship.
The Captain Shavhad goes, "What do you mean?"
"Computers, windows down."
All of a sudden, Tarkus slams his fist down on his chair, hits a giant red button on the arm, and the windshield of the starship pops off the front with a large hiss and flies into the empty space. Half of them get their environmental protection suits on in time as they fly helplessly out to the front of the ship. The other half die a horrible death as their blood boils and their skin freezes at the same time. And Tarkus is attached to the captain's chair by a long metal cable. And he whips off the sniper rifle from his back and starts taking shots at the helpless pirates. One of their helmets splatters from the inside as blood fills it. And he kills all of them, not wearing any environmental protections himself. And he aims a sniper at this old captain. Sides it up and doesn't fire. And instead he watches him float off into the void of space.
It was fucked. See you later. He's coming back for sure.
Chink.
Tarkus reels himself back into the ship and presses a button, and another windshield slides into place and repressurizes the ship.
Tarkus takes a seat on his captain's chair and says, "Well, guess they got iced."
Boo!
Fuck!
And he chuckles and chortles to himself on his spaceship alone and reaches back for the bag of chips to find that it has been sucked into space.
I should tell my mom about this.
Blackout. And we're back in the room with Mrs. Belbuck.